Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan. That's Vic on the ones and twos. I'm Blake Murphy. She's Ailish Forfar with a tissue. And he's JD Bunkus, still giggling up a storm at Ailish's misfortune.
It's that dry season, though. That's what it is.
Yeah, get that humidifier going.
Yeah, I'm going to have to.
Some SponCon, if there's any humidifier companies. Tiny Jay's note before we get to Ross Tucker. Someone retweeted something from Kevin Gausman back in 2017.
Oh.
He wears number 34. Obviously, Roy Halladay's number 32 is retired with the Blue Jays. He wears number 34 because Roy Halladay was his favorite pitcher, and 34 will be available with the Blue Jays.
That's
lovely. A nice little Jays tie-in. Also lovely, our next guest. And this insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. It's Ross Tucker, the former NFL offensive lineman, the host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, RossTucker.com. Ross, what's up, man?
What's up is I like how you guys like, well, first of all, that music coming back from break, that was very, I don't know what that was. That was intense, the music coming back. But I like how you guys change it up where sometimes JD has the lead, sometimes it's Ailish, today it's you, Blake. It, you know, I never know when I call in who exactly is going to introduce me, although I now am beyond curious as to why JD is giggling at Ailish.
I got a nosebleed live on air in the last interview, and I had to sprint out of the room because it just started pouring out of my face. And now I had a tissue stuck up there.
And it's not even so much that I was like laughing because she got a bloody nose, because that's always, you know, you never want to see somebody with that. It's that she got my attention, pointed at her nose. There was no blood, and then the blood started, like she waited to show me. She was going to get a nosebleed.
Well, I just had to just prove it.
Leaving the room. That's what I mean. She's like, I needed you to know the truth. I was like, the truth that you can get nosebleeds? I believed you were human. So,
Do you get them a lot, Ailish?
I have in the past gotten quite a few nosebleeds, but I usually get them around this time of year if I were to get them because it's dry and, like, you know, your apartment's like.
Well, you're tough. You're a hockey player.
That's right. It's no biggie.
Yeah. So, I'm trying to think of some kind of stop the bleeding reference to come in here. But, yeah, is it time for the Browns to just stop the bleeding and bench Baker Mayfield? Like, I know it's not all his fault, Ross, but I'm sorry. I just don't see a guy that can possibly be looked at as better than Case Keenum right now. I just don't.
So I was at that game last night. Okay. I called the game for Western 1, and I actually didn't think Baker played very poorly. I thought he actually played pretty decently. I was surprised how often nobody was open. The Browns have a problem. I thought Baker was getting the ball out quick at times. And when he would buy time, when he would use his legs to buy time because there was pressure, none of the Browns would ever uncover for him. You know, I went into that game being pretty skeptical of Baker. And I think it's really interesting. Like, it's a whole discussion we could have, I think. Mm-hmm. But when you watch the television copy, a lot of times you don't see what's happening down the field. You don't see. Like, there was one time where if you just watch the TV copy, Jarvis Landry looked like he was wide open. Uh-huh. But actually being there in the booth, Patrick Queen was right there with him. He just, like, he got cut off on the television. It really is fascinating. There's a lot of power for the television producer and director into what they show you. You combine that with, I don't know what Collinsworth and Tirico were saying, but I can tell you what I was seeing and what I was saying is I did not think Baker played poorly. I thought, you know, I thought he actually played okay. They did not have very many open guys. When they were open, I thought he hit them. Mm. I thought the problem was a combination of the Browns' scheme not getting enough guys open, the Browns not being able to run a lick, and the players themselves not uncovering when Baker would buy time.
So just to play, like, devil's advocate here on Baker, this isn't just a one-week thing, right? The Browns came into this year as the favorites in that division, and the Ravens are just historically a team that have dominated them, right? Like, I think they've swept them multiple times since the franchise came back to Cleveland. I think that there's been, like, I know it's been more years than not. I can't remember exactly what the streak is right now. And this Browns team was supposed to take a step, And I know the running attack didn't look very good last night, but Baltimore was loading up against it. And that's been the book against Cleveland is, hey, let's load up against the run. Let's try to take away Nick Chubb. And if we can take that away, can Baker Mayfield beat us? And so I might say, like, okay, he hit a few guys that were open. Okay, he did something. But he had chances in this game to do things. And once again, it's like, it's a completion percentage under 50. It's only one passing touchdown. It's a really, really bad turnover at a really, really bad time after your defense got back on it. And this is the number that stuck out to me, Ross. Is like, so teams that the opposing quarterback throws four interceptions in were 37-0. And now they're not anymore. There's a loss in that win column. There's a loss in that column now. And it's against Baker Mayfield. And when I look at this team, they're supposed to have Kevin Stefanski. They were supposed to have receivers. So maybe some guys didn't get open last night. Maybe you saw a better Baker Mayfield performance. When I'm looking at the body of work overall, where is the sign that I'm seeing a guy that was a number one overall pick? Where am I seeing a guy that elevates his teammates or his team overall?
Yeah, I think that's probably fair given the entire season and the whole body of work. But I'm just telling you what I saw last night, which is I was really surprised. I'm a big Kevin Stefanski guy. He was the coach of the year last year. I was surprised. The Ravens are 31st in the NFL in passing yards allowed. You know, they can be had in the passing game, and I did not see a lot of opportunity for the Browns to do that. I saw Baker when he had time, nobody was open. When he bought extra time, nobody got open. I thought when guys were open, for the most part, he put it on them. I think your point about the fumble that slipped out of his hands, that was a disaster. But he actually saw the blitz coming and audible to a screen. It was the perfect play. That was just unfortunate. And I guess to your point, on some level, he's not the one that threw four interceptions, right? I mean, Lamar Jackson did, yet his team won, so Lamar gets the praise or doesn't get as much criticism because they won.
So over the last three games, Mayfield's completion percentage is just shy of 51%, averaging 5.7 yards per attempt, and that offense has only scored 30 points. I know that, and again, I don't want to just pick on Baker, but if you're that team, what do you need to see over these last couple weeks to feel like there's momentum back in the right direction? Because this was a Baker Mayfield discussion early in the season, and it feels like since, you know, week two, maybe week five, if you want to be generous, it's really gone the opposite way.
You guys are really on Baker today. Okay, I'm going to take a different tact. He sucks. They should bench him and cut him. No, you know what? I think everybody, you know, what I think is interesting to your point, right? Especially now, the thing I will say is, Baker threw it well last night and moved well. But I know that if I were a Browns fan or the Browns management, I kind of feel like I want to play Case Keenum just to see how much of it is on Baker and how much of it is on the offense in general, right? It's like a scientific experiment, and you want to have a control group to see, okay, maybe if we had Case Keenum in there, you know, there'd be more of a spark and we'd be able to see that, yes, Baker is the problem. But I was, at least for one game, I was really disappointed overall in the Browns offense, and losing Conklin injury really hurt. He is in his fourth year. They've already picked up his fifth year option. But I do think, here's what I think. The rest of the year determines how aggressive the Browns will be trying to get somebody better, and then who is actually available will determine whether or not the Browns move on from Baker Mayfield, right? So I think he's fine. I think he's a top 20 quarterback in the NFL. But if he can get like Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, he was really upset at the Baker question.
Well, he hung up on us. Hey, he's like, guys.
We'll get him back on the line in a second here. I'm just going to say this, that Lamar did throw four interceptions, but guess what? Lamar also made plays to win that game. Lamar also had moments where he makes a big, he break a broken play, he scrambles to the right, he makes the throw downfield. Like Baker, that's the thing. Okay, you're all right. You had some moments where you're okay, where you hit your wide open receivers, like that's the bar for you? It's just like there's no playmaking for me with Baker. There's no elevation of your team. And I'm sorry, if I'm a Browns fan, you're watching right now, you're watching this Bengals team that is supposed to be a step behind you, at least two steps behind you with their number one overall pick, and they're way ahead of you. And all of a sudden, it's like this division was vulnerable this year. The Ravens, I know they're 8-3, but they've got one of the worst. They've had a bad defense this year. They're the worst tackling team in football. Ross just outlined their pass defense like it hasn't been a good one. Mm-hmm. The division has an aging Steelers team. This was supposed to be Browns fans' time. If this is a normal Browns year, you're going, oh, 6-6. You know, this is amazing. We're Super Bowl. This is a Super Bowl is being 500 for the Factory of Sadness. But this was supposed to be the big step year. This was supposed to be the leap forward. And it feels like they've taken a big step back. And even if Baker has a good game, everything I keep seeing is a guy who continuously does not elevate his team. He does not make the game-winning play. He does not make the big throw downfield. He doesn't end up actually breaking some teams back like Lamar Jackson did in that game. So we got Ross back on. You want to move off it? And then, like, is Ross, will you just think that we're just doing a hit piece now on Baker? But, yeah.
No.
Well, first of all, I was like, man, they really didn't like that answer. They just hung up on me.
You hung up on us.
Yeah, I did. I was like, you know what?
I mean, unless my ear hit the button, I'm just sitting here in my chair talking with you guys, looking in the woods. But, I would say I think the last part, JD, that you just talked about, I think it's really, really fair, right? Like, when they got the ball and it was 16-10, the end of the game, zero faith or confidence that he was going to lead them down for a touchdown. That's the problem, right? Like, it doesn't seem like he rises to the occasion there. And that's why I think he appears to me to be in the category of quarterback that there will always be a team that will have him because he's solid, but you'll always kind of wish you had somebody better.
Okay, let's talk about someone else that we might be doing a hit piece on. Three losses in a row, including coming out of a bye, the Rams. Are we disappointed in Stafford, and what is your take on what's happening over there?
Yeah, they haven't won a game yet since they put the dream team together, getting Von Miller and Odell Beckham Jr. I tweeted that yesterday at Ross Tucker NFL. It's funny how in the NFL it just doesn't work that way. Football is such a unique sport that you can actually acquire or compile a lot of talent and still not really click as a team. You know, it seemed like the Patriots, when I was playing New England, I remember I was up in the GM's office, Scott Pioli, and he had a huge sign in his office that said, you are building a team. You are not acquiring talent, which I just thought was really interesting. Meaning, you know, I think they always are trying to take into account, well, how does this guy fit our culture? How does his personality and his work ethic and all those things? I don't know. I don't know Von Miller or Odell Beckham Jr. well enough, and maybe that has nothing to do with it. Maybe it's all these injuries that we found out Matthew Stafford has yesterday in the report in the morning. Maybe that's why he and they are not playing as well. By the way, can I just say, that is laughable. Like, I am so tired. Baker Mayfield has four injuries. Matthew Stafford has three. This guy has this. Like, I got news for you. If you're an NFL starter and you're playing in week 12, you've got some injuries. You've got some things you're dealing with. And we keep hearing about the quarterbacks. You don't think the lineman? I watched Vita Vea. I watched a tooth pop out yesterday.
That's his own
during
fault.
A play, and all we're gonna it's just comical to me. We only ever hear about the quarterback injuries, and then we hear about the quarterback injuries when they're playing poorly, right? When they're playing well, they don't mention them. It's just I would love to know, like, who put that out there? Like, who leaked that? Was it Stafford himself or his agent or the team wanting some built-in excuses for them struggling recently? I don't know, but it's kind of hard to believe that they're going the wrong way now. Three losses in a row. I really thought after the bye that they would kind of right the ship a little bit. I was very disappointed in their performance against Aaron Rodgers. Oh, by the way, Aaron Rodgers, another quarterback injured. We should all say a prayer and just, oh my goodness, He has a broken pinky toe. Big deal.
Yeah. So a bunch of things on the Rams quickly. One, is I think this is maybe a little bit more appreciation for Robert Woods, because he sort of gets to be the forgotten guy next to Cooper Kupp, and he's very, very good at football. And when you lose him, you don't replace him with Odell Beckham Jr., who hasn't been relevant in 5 years. And I loved watching Odell on the sideline with his back, speaking of guys who are like overplaying an injury, where he's like got the compress on and he's like, and you're like, oh, Odell, oh, really? Odell's making a scene? Like, I can't believe that the Odell Beckham Jr. thing hasn't made you Super Bowl champions. But lastly, the thing about Stafford, I think, is especially relevant, Ross, because that was part of the thing with Stafford, is he kept getting hurt, that he was beat up, that he was a 33-year-old quarterback, and they went out and got him, and everyone was having the celebration. They were anointing him the MVP, and they were like, oh, now we get to see the genius of McVay, and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, yeah, guess what? The older quarterback who got hurt a bunch is an old quarterback who's maybe hurt right now. Like, I don't know why that somehow lets the Rams off the hook for this decision. It's like you use significant draft capital to go out and choose your quarterback. This was McVay's big move. He did it. And the thing that everyone wondered, what if it could happen again, is happening again. And I don't know why that somehow is like, oh, that's better than if he's just performing poorly and he's not beat up.
Who said it lets him off the hook?
Well, I mean it more.
Let him off the hook at all.
Of course not. I just mean more like the narrative around it is kind of like, hey, you know, Stafford's really good. He's just not healthy. I'm like, is he really good? Like, is he really good? I think that he's talented. I think that he has a big arm. I think that he probably got stuck in a really bad situation for a lot of years. But people act like this guy is some kind of like lock for the Hall of Fame, or that he is someone that has been so poorly done by throughout his career that we've never been able to get a real judgment on him. I'm like, I don't know. I'm watching this, and this doesn't feel like, oh, wow, I cannot believe that Matthew Stafford is not elevating this football team. Like, it's just a bit odd to me that he gets so much praise for having done not really a whole hell of a lot outside of get, like, a lot of garbage time yards in Detroit and having been with Megatron.
Yeah, and I think what he's doing right now is what he's kind of always done. And
yes,
I think we shouldn't be surprised. I think this is kind of who he's always been. And, you know, you use the word elevate. And I always think it's interesting because I guess you don't know for a guy like him whether it's him or whether it's Detroit. And I'm sure if he went to New England or went to with Andy Reid or somewhere, I'm sure he would have had a better career to this point. But you know, I don't know. They've got pretty much talent in L.A. He's with Sean McVay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jared Goff won a lot of games as the quarterback of the Rams, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So Stafford doesn't really have an excuse not to win a bunch of games, because the guy that can't win a game in Detroit won a bunch of games in L.A.
Ross, before we let you go, a quick one here. Just I'm watching the Niners game, and I see Kyle Juszczyk try to jump into the end zone from like the 5 or 6 yard line. Do you guys use different dimensions in the Ivy League? Is there, like, we have the metric conversion when you come to Canada. Is there a yardage conversion from the Ivy League that he thought he could make that?
Yeah, that was like a Dartmouth move. You know what I mean? I mean, he literally tried to jump over five guys from the 5 yard line and came up 4 yards short.
Mm-hmm.
That was an absolutely, there were some hilarious plays. Like the Vea tooth popping out, but Juszczyk doing that. I have no idea, Blake, what he was thinking or doing. I love that dude. I have him on my Ross Tucker podcast all the time. I called his games in college. He's a stud, but yes, that was hilarious. I guess it was fourth down. He's like, I don't know. He should have pitched it back. Like, could have done anything other than that.
The Ross Tucker football podcast, by the way, is where you can hear more of Ross, as well as rostucker.com. Ross Tucker, thank you so much for taking the time this morning, man.
See you, dudes. Likewise.
That Insider has been brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com.
I got big time football brain today. I know the Jays made a signing. I know the Leafs are red hot. I don't really know what to say about the Raptors right now.
Yeah, but the Leafs are so hot that you can embrace the football brain, because it's like, yeah, the Leafs are fine.
You can put them on the back burner for a bit.
Yeah.
You can use that brain space for something else.
The Leafs would have to lose two in a row before everything melted down again.
I'm going to need a day tomorrow. And, you know, tomorrow's text line Tuesday. Hey, you know, Blue Jays, don't sign anybody tonight, all right?
Hey,
wait a day. No, just wait one day. But let me get off.
Tomorrow's like the, well, I guess the Wednesday is the deadline, but
yeah.
Tonight is the night that everyone is expecting most things get reported because that gives you time to do the physicals and the paperwork and stuff to get it over the finish line by December 1st. I don't think you're getting the easy night the open show that you're quite hoping for.
I'm
tomorrow.
Not getting an easy night because I have to watch the Seahawks play football and I have to sit yes. there for 3 hours and ruin my life and sit there and hate it, hate every second. And there's no outcome that's good, right? There's none. Even if they play well, I'm like, great. You beat Washington without Chase Young and you're making it more likely that Pete Carroll doesn't get fired because you go on some run at the end of the year. You're just making me remember how good Russell Wilson is, all these different things. This is a nightmare. But there were so many things from Sunday. I'll tell you this, rapid fire quickly. I didn't think much of the Patriots win because Tennessee had nobody. I'm watching Donta Foreman and someone named Hilliard play for them, and then a bunch of receivers I've never heard of in my life before.
Good. Let them have false confidence going into next Monday.
I'm just saying that wasn't exactly like they put up a big score and they were dominant and they won, and I think Judon is amazing. But like that Titans team, the way they were yesterday, like, there's no wonder why they lost to Houston the week before, right? The Niners, I'm buying. I'm buying the Niners stock. And it's funny because I actually think about Baker and Garoppolo, like when he said the thing when Ross was like, oh, yeah, you know, like he's a guy that's going to be around and he's good enough, but he's not really, you'll always kind of want more. I think about Baker as Jimmy Garoppolo. And I don't think that's really what you want when you take a guy first overall. And that works if you have Deebo Samuel and you're just... by the way, hopefully Deebo Samuel's all right. But it's okay if you have the number one rushing attack in the NFL and you're really well coached.
Just
and you've got
infinite running backs.
Right. But it's not okay when you're a Browns team and you're in a tough division and you're looking at a bunch of years against Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson, because those guys are going to make plays. Those guys are going to beat your ass. And I think the Browns are in a really, really tough spot, like a really tough spot. And to me, the only solution is they got to go all in right now and make a massively splashy trade. If someone like a Russell Wilson does become available, like a top tier quarterback, that has to be priority number one. And who cares? Let Baker go somewhere else.
As a Seahawks fan, what would you like? What would your ask be? What does that package have
multiple,
to look like?
Multiple first round picks. And like, no, it has to be, because you don't care about Baker. That's, you know what? I would actually use the like Jared Goff trade as a bit of a template where you'd say, hey, Seattle's going to take Baker because why not? What else are you going to do in the interim? And you're going to get multiple, like, maybe four first round picks, honestly. Like, it's got to be that type of a leverage deal. And I know some Browns fan hears that and goes, what are you talking about? Nah, this is a league where you get two first round picks for defensive backs. And I know the Jamal Adams trade was bad. I'm referencing the Jalen Ramsey one, mm-hmm. who's one of the best players in the league. Mm-hmm. But if the Stafford deal, and I know that the Stafford deal was in part to get off the Jared Goff money, but you're also paying Seattle to get off the Baker Mayfield decision. And I don't think Baker has positive value in the NFL right now. Like, I don't think anyone's giving you anything for Baker.
Well, because you're trading for the right to extend him.
Right, exactly. So if you're doing this kind of a move, I think you got to give up a minimum of three first-round picks plus things around the peripheral. But I don't know. That's where it would start for me.
It's a complicated situation. Another complicated situation that grew more complicated over the weekend, and we're going to talk to Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated about after the break. Goran Dragic, now away from the Raptors indefinitely.
You got to love how this guy has never, like, again, you know what? I don't care. Today I'm in a sour mood. No, here's what I'm saying. I was right about the Browns. I was right about Goran Dragic. Yeah. All you Raptors sycophants on Twitter were like, oh, Dragic is going to be this guy. Everyone's going to love him, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, they should have traded him right away. They never should have let him play a day in the uniform. And people were like, oh, you're so rude to Dragic. He's a veteran. He knows what to do. He never wanted to play here.
But this is the meme that you shared on Instagram last week of like the CBA rule guy and the trade guy.
Yeah, but it was just like he said that thing about not wanting to come to Toronto. And then like, he and Grange put that piece out together where they're like, no, it's not like that.
Yeah, and everyone's saying the right things. But like
it is like that.
Anyway, we'll talk more about that coming out of the break. We'll talk about it with Chris Mannix, senior writer at Sports Illustrated.
Has anyone ever not like this? Has anyone not played for the Raptors as little as Goran Dragic and talked about? It's like Alonzo Mourning. This is the new Alonzo Mourning. We're like, hey, he got traded here. Didn't want to play here. And yet we talked about him for a long time.
Chris Mannix. Well, we'll talk about him at least once more with Chris Mannix, and then probably once more at the deadline or buyout season.
Please.
Chris Mannix, that's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm J.D. Bunkus. Blake Murphy. Ailish Forfar. We're all here. Goran Dragic is not. And I said this leading into the break, but not since morning have we had a guy that gets talked about in Toronto who has played less in Toronto or has been less relevant to Toronto. And yet here we are yet again. Chris Mannix, senior writer, Sports Illustrated, co-host of the Crossover Podcast and Celtics analyst for NBC Sports Boston. How's it going, Chris? Good morning.
What's going on, guys?
What's going on here is that Goran Dragic is not going to play for the Raptors, which is really big news because, you know, he's played so many games as a Raptor and he's been such a foundational piece for this organization.
90 minutes.
Yeah, 90 whole minutes. And it's such a weird story, Chris, because basically the second that the Raptors traded for him, it was, oh, this guy's going to get flipped in a deal. And then he's in Slovenia and he's like, yeah, I don't want to play here. And then he says he does, but we know it's kind of like a fluff piece. And now he's staying there, and we don't know exactly all the circumstances around it, but part of it is that he's not been involved in any of the basketball here. I'll just ask you this. Do you think that a trade eventually materializes for this guy, like that he'll ever have any kind of a value for the Raptors? Because it's only relevant from the standpoint of he was a piece in the Lowry deal, and it does feel a little light to be only receiving Precious Achiuwa for Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, I don't think he makes any kind of meaningful impact for the Raptors on the court this season. His value is going to be what you can get for him at the trade deadline. And I do think there'll be a market for him. You can see already there's a level of parity in the NBA that you saw last season, but you know, you don't often see where, you know, in the Eastern Conference, there's a lot of teams that feel like they've got a shot. In the Western Conference, Golden State's playing great, but you know, they certainly are not the Golden State teams of years past where they looked infallible. So I think that there are going to be a number of teams that look at Dragic and see what he did in Miami and the scoring ability he has and are going to make Toronto some kind of offer. I mean, look, we all know the Raptors could have flipped him, you know, immediately. They just didn't like what they were being offered. I think that, you know, they'll be appealing enough offers for Goran before the deadline that I think you'll see some value returned in a trade.
So the part of the complication there is that Dragic makes over $19 million and you got to make the salaries match there, which is, right, you know, potentially why the Mavericks framework didn't work initially. And then, you know, the Mavericks had 100 injuries to their front court where they couldn't really deal from that. But yes, teams will, especially in a year that feels this even, someone's going to want him ahead of February. I guess my question would be, do any of those teams, and the Mavericks are the most obvious one of this because of the Luka relationship, but the Raptors here are in a game of a leverage game a little bit, because I can't imagine Dragic rejoins the team before the February trade deadline. December 15th is kind of the unofficial start of trade season because so many players around the league who signed in the offseason can be dealt. Could you see teams just not offering much and just like waiting the Raptors out? Because if he's not dealt by the deadline, he's almost certainly a buyout candidate, right?
He would be. I think that's certainly going to be on the minds of teams, especially teams that are in, let's say, appealing locations for Dragic, whether it is a Dallas or, you know, another team out there that feels like he'd want to be there. All that being said, I do think there'll be teams that don't want to roll the dice on something like that. You mentioned the salary. It is a big number, but bizarrely in today's NBA, it's not that big, you know, where you can get to $19 million in salary swaps, you know, relatively easily, you know, if you're some team. So I think there'll be enough teams out there that are interested in making a deal that you'll see some of these teams that don't want to, you know, take that chance and that'll make an offer. I don't know right now who that team is going to be. You mentioned December 15th. That is kind of the unofficial start of trade season because of the players that are, you know, automatically available at that point. But you don't often see deals, you know, done between December and, you know, mid-January. I think this will go all the way up to that February trade deadline. And then Masai Ujiri, Bobby Webster will probably take the best deal that's on the table.
Yeah, that's how we kind of teed it up. We did some preseason props, and our over-under was, you know, one day before the trade deadline, is he still a Raptor? So yeah. I think it's going to go down there. Someone who's a little tougher to trade because it's a much higher salary and 2 years left on that deal. You had your latest at Sports Illustrated arguing that John Wall and the Rockets have to part ways. This is a much higher leverage situation than Dragic and the Raptors, where everyone kind of knew the score and this was always what was going to happen. What is your feeling on the Wall situation and how that could, you know, or could it change the landscape of how the NBA looks the second half here if something shakes out in Houston?
Yeah, well, as far as a trade goes with Wall, there's like a 0.000001% chance he gets traded. I mean, he has maybe the most untradeable contract right now in the NBA. In fact, maybe the only player you could trade him for is a guy he was already traded for, Russell Westbrook. You know, that's like, it really is. Like, he's, you know, he's one distressed asset available to be traded for another. So it's not going to happen via deal, which I'm surprised both sides didn't kind of realize early on. It's almost like we're here in late November and John Wall and the Rockets have discovered that there's no trade market for him. Like, anyone could have seen that. I mean, Wall played reasonably well last year, but he's not the all-star he used to be, and he's got 2 years, including this one, and 90-ish million dollars left on his contract. So I don't know why we're kind of at this point where they're realizing that there's no trade market for him. Now, it's a strange situation. You know, Wall wants, from what I was told this week, Wall just wants the opportunity to compete for a starting spot with that team, whereas the Rockets, they know that if it's an open competition, John Wall probably wins it, but they don't want that. They want to play Kevin Porter Jr. as a starting point guard. They want to play Jalen Green alongside him, but they want to play Wall, you know, kind of in that complimentary 15 to 25 minute per game type of range. He's just not interested in that type of role. What I find the most strange in all this, that the NBA is just kind of sitting back observing all this. Like, you know, this is the Rockets effectively tanking, you know, all season long. Like, they're just saying, we don't want to add a player that might help us win to the mix. And I know the NBA kind of opened Pandora's box here with what Al Horford did last year in Oklahoma City, but the idea that it's okay to just shelve a player that might help you win, that just doesn't sit well with me. So there's a lot of layers to this, and I just don't think this ends well with John Wall in Houston.
Well, you could almost make the case that they're trying to emulate the team I want to talk about next, which is the 76ers, when they did the process, right? Where you're going, hey, we're just tanking, and everybody's just going, hey, that's fine, as long as we end up with some pieces, as long as we end up being good later down the line, as long as we end up like pieces like Ben Simmons. Where are we at with him right now? Like, has anything shifted? Do we expect anything to shift? Because it's just like getting really, really strange that we're now at the like lack of update place.
Well, there's still a high level of frustration in Philadelphia within the organization at where they are with Ben Simmons. There still is no trade market for him at the moment. At least nothing that the Sixers are willing to consider, and Ben Simmons is still not close to being able to or being ready to return to the floor. Now, the Sixers, as you guys are well aware, I mean, they have to navigate a little bit of a minefield here. When Ben Simmons talks about his mental health, you know, they can't just dismiss it. They can't just say, you know, all right, well, you know, we've given you enough time, come back on the floor and play. You can't be that tone deaf, especially, you know, in today's kind of landscape. But, you know, there's a feeling, and I think it's no surprise, a pretty strong one, that, like, you know, this could be a tactic, you know, from Ben Simmons to try to find a way to force the Sixers to keep paying him while not having to suit up for Philadelphia. We are barreling towards, I think, a breaking point here. I don't know what day that's going to come or what point in the season it's going to come. But, you know, eventually you will see the Sixers once again start to find Ben Simmons, and from there, I don't know where we go. The Sixers have been adamant they're not just going to offload him to anybody, and Ben Simmons is pretty adamant he doesn't want to play in Philadelphia. So I think the next step in this, I was going to say process, but I hate to use that word again with Philadelphia, but the next step in all this is the Sixers will start finding Ben Simmons again, and then we'll see what Simmons does from there.
Chris Mannix, senior writer for Sports Illustrated, again, co-host of the Crossover Podcast, which is excellent, and Celtics analyst for NBC Sports Boston. Thanks, as always, for making time this morning, man.
You got it, guys.
Take care.
Also a great boxing guy.
Yeah, really great boxing guy. What are you supposed to ask? Hey, are you grateful that the Paul brothers saved boxing?
So just, I want to touch on the Dragic thing coming out, if that's okay.
It's not, but sure.
Okay, thanks, man. So, first of all, it's not, I mean, most of what Chris said is accurate, obviously. Yeah. It's not that easy to find trade salary that matches, that doesn't take back extra money for the Raptors. And I don't mean extra money this year, because they did cut Sam Decker to get a little bit of wiggle room under the tax. But if you want them to take on a guy's contract to match that has money for next year, you're going to have to pay them to do so. And you look at the guys who make enough money for a one-for-one swap, and Taurean Prince and Gary Harris are just about the only expiring ones that fit that salary criteria. So yeah, then you're looking at piling multiple guys together. The other option is a three-teamer, and this stuff always presents itself, right? Like, you kick a second to someone and they eat something, and you know, something else comes back your way. The Dragic thing in general, though, this is not all that surprising. From what I hear, basically, is there's been open communication the whole time. Everyone knows the score. He's not going to play unless Fred VanVleet were to get hurt. And his family is in Miami, and he doesn't see, like, why would you move your family to Toronto to pack up and move again by February? So this is, you know, the Raptors' way of playing nice while they wait this out. Dragic gets to go home and be closer to family and be on the beach in Miami. It's really not, I mean, it's a big deal on a night like last night where the Raptors suddenly only have 11 guys and not all 11 of those are rotation caliber guys against a team like Boston. And it's newsy because it's newsy, and it's, but this was always like a possibility, and it's really just the difference of him doing this in Toronto versus doing it in Miami. You know, like, it's not a huge thing, I don't think.
No, it's not. Nothing has changed here, right? Other than his location. He was not playing before. He's not playing now. Nothing has really actually changed.
He's on the beach instead of in the snow.
Bingo.
With family. I mean, the family part's probably the biggest part of it.
The only thing I find really interesting about this whole story is, yeah, if they can get anything back, because I love trades, and so, sure, sign me up for even a meaningless trade.
Yeah, just like, if it's Taurean Prince and a second comes back, at least it's a second. And then it's Precious Achiuwa and a second for shaking hands on the Kyle Lowry thing.
Not great, but at least Precious had that quarter.
17 points.
Against the Grizzlies. We'll always hang the banner of the freshest third quarter against the Grizzlies. So what I find interesting about the Dragic thing, though, is that when he came here, it was already like, hey, this is a way station. So not that he was ever expected to really buy in, but that they never really even entertained the idea of playing him. And again, this Raptors team, a lot of nights, they look like they could just be right there, you know? Like, they've had some bad performances. The defense has been bad. There's all kinds of different stuff. I don't mean right there in terms of a championship, but, like, most nights where they play games, I don't feel like they're getting wildly outplayed by a team. Like, last night, the Boston game comes down in the final couple of minutes of the game, and they end up letting the Celtics go on a run. Celtics are a better team. They had more at their disposal. But I keep thinking, hey, when the Raptors get everybody back, what does it look like? And that's the only thing about the Dragic stuff, is it's hard for me to take it in as a, well, you actually are trying to make the playoffs this year, when you couldn't even find a way to see what you were going to have with Dragic. And when you were so open to playing Banton and Flynn, who as a fan of this team and as someone who recognizes that, hey, you're building towards a championship, I do think that, hey, it's better to have those guys play this year. But also, it's hard to say things like, well, getting in the playoffs, they value the experience of getting in the playoffs, and they value the experience
because
of being
Dragic is better than those guys.
Yeah, no kidding is he better than those guys. Like, so, yeah, it's an odd one to me in terms of the way that we frame this season.
And it's the tough spot the Raptors are in, right? Where it is, they would like to make the playoffs, and they would like that experience for guys, but they also want to develop guys now, and Dragic wasn't, I mean, this was always, I'm honestly surprised he even played five games. Like, yeah. I know that everyone wanted to play nice and said the right things and stuff, but, like, this always screamed to me he's just going to sit there until mm-hmm. a trade materializes. And, like, part of that's sometimes complicated to explain because, yeah, it does feel a little weird to pay a guy $19 million to sit at home. But also, Goran Dragic signed that deal with Miami mm-hmm. with a team option on the extra year, and everyone at the time was like, oh, yeah, that team option is in case they need the salary for salary matching. Mm-hmm. And he's getting paid $19 million for that. It's not like he's losing his $19 million.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's an awkward situation, but it's not that uncommon. And sure. It's fine. You just have to wait for the trade market to play out because, unfortunately, there are a bunch of CBA complications here.
I will say that is another component of it, though. And I think it's open to criticism, is that if the Raptors really can't get anything for Dragic, when they first acquired him, and it's not like there was this overwhelming trade market, right? Of course not. But if they could have at least got something for him immediately, and then they played it out the strategy this way, where they decided to go like, hey, you know what? We don't like what we see right now, so we're going to hold out and wait. I actually think that compounds the Lowry screw up.
Well, because the only thing is I don't know that they could have flipped him for something that didn't also take on long-term money, like right. a deal longer than 1 year.
I get that. I'm just saying I'd rather have an asset. Like, even if it's Dwight Powell, where there's not a comfortable roster fit, right, which was one of the rumors that they could have had.
Hey, Dwight Powell, he looked real good right now.
That's what I'm saying, is, like, you'd rather have Dwight Powell in his contract than not Dwight Powell in his contract. So if you end up getting nothing here, he ends up getting bought out, or you get a second-round pick, then I think you can look at this and go, hey, I'm sorry, but you held on to Lowry too long. Because the offer was better at the time for Lowry, at least even the Miami one. Even the idea that they could have gotten maybe Duncan Robinson, that let me believe that that was there. And then you look at it and go, wait, so you held out twice and both times you ended up with less assets because you waited because you didn't like the moves? Sometimes waiting isn't good. Like, look at what's happened with Ben Simmons. I think this is a good way to put it too, is like, are the Sixers really going to find a deal that's that much better than what would have been there for them during the offseason with Ben Simmons? Like, are we really expecting now that, you remember some of those trade offers that were out there that involved the Sacramento Kings and some of these other, the Cleveland Cavaliers one, which actually, I don't know if that was real or whether or not I just made that up and other people made that one up too, but
the Sexton one.
Yeah, Sexton and Love and whatever, but I'd rather have Sexton and Love right now than,
just those two names back to back.
Yeah, sorry. Sexton and Love.
But,
well, here's the thing with the second round pick.
Waiting can burn you too.
Waiting can burn you too.
It can. And so, yeah, because it's not only that the offers change, but you lose leverage, right? Like at 2:59 on the trade deadline, some team is probably going to call the Raptors and be like, look, this is it, or you're buying them out. Because you're not, like, if he's on the roster past the deadline, they're buying him out. It's a bad, at that point, it's a bad look, and it's an agent thing. And so, yeah, but a second round pick's not nothing. You can get Delano Banton.
Oh yeah, that's hope.
Or Norman Powell.
You could get Jokic. You could get Draymond.
Or
you
DeJuan Hernandez. Johnson.
Yeah, where is DeJuan Hernandez? Is he alive? Like, where
he's
is he?
Kicking around. Well, I mean, he's kicking around. He was in the G League last year and got traded. Like, the 905 dealt him away.
Oh, he's not even on the.
Oh.
No, he's not. No, the 905 traded him last year.
Okay. Well.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
He had a good run.
he's playing in Israel now.
Hey, my school, the U.
Yeah.
So it was Amy Otterbert, loved him, but didn't work out. Do we have any texts you want to do? Oh, we also got some food.
We got some snacks. Let's do the fun stuff. Not a lot of texts, guys. Like, what's going on? Wakey, wakey.
Well, tomorrow's text.
Send us some texts.
People are saving it for tomorrow.
We miss you guys. Tell us about your weekend, but also ask us questions. Okay, that's $5.90. But we got a great little special delivery during the break. Tim Hortons, Tim Biebs. If you have not seen yet, Tim Hortons and Justin Bieber are doing a collaboration, and they've launched these limited edition Tim Biebs Timbits available starting today across Canada. Justin Bieber helped create these three limited edition flavors, chocolate white fudge.
You baked them.
Yes. Sour cream chocolate chip. Yum, yum, yum. And birthday cake waffle. Yeah. Yum, yum, yum. You can also purchase these special Tim Biebs merchandise at participating Tim Hortons locations across the country. And that is a really cool fanny pack, a toque, and
tote.
A tote bag. Mm. And it's probably going to be a frenzy trying to get them because people are going to want to have that limited edition merch. But we got the Tim Biebs during the break, and we've all eaten some.
Well, Blake is eating, I think, his first ones now, right now.
Yum,
right?
Yum.
Yeah, I'm in there.
Yeah, how's it? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, they're Timbits.
Yeah,
they're Tim Biebs.
I don't taste a huge difference, but they're good. I mean, the chocolate white fudge one is good. That's the only one I tried so far, and then I just took a little bite of the birthday cake. Right now.
So the chocolate white fudge, I'm a big fan of chocolate Timbits in general. This is just a very fancy looking chocolate Timbit. It's got some nice stuff on the outside. It's visually appealing. It's delicious.
I like this one. Was
that the birthday cake waffle one?
Mm-mm.
The birthday cake waffle one, I liked a lot. I like that. I think it's a delicious mixing of birthday cake and donut. And
I gotta say,
no, I just had sour cream chocolate chip.
Mm. I'm not sour cream guy. You can have mine.
Oh, good.
But it's not really sour cream. Like, I don't like the idea of eating sour cream.
I know, but I don't like the.
Yeah, no one thinks it's like sour cream.
Yeah, I don't think it's bread dipped in sour cream.
No, you bite into it and sour cream comes out.
No, I mean, like, I don't like sour cream glazed donuts. So
that's
the best one. Like that. But I will say,
yeah, it's messed up.
While I was not involved in much of the chip discussion last week,
right?
I am really anticipating that Ailish's food stuff on the show is just like we're constantly going to be getting sent stuff of like, hey, Ailish can try this on the show, and Blake and JD will get her runoff snacks.
Yeah, I want some runoff snacks.
I'm ready for it.
I'm ready for the trickle-down effect of just, like, being the parasite that lives off of, like, Ailish getting all kinds of free
food. Mm-hmm. I, last night, just out of interest, I put a little poll on my Instagram story about eggnog, because I just don't know what people's thoughts on our eggnog been. I saw that eggnog's now out. And I was very surprised to see that it was about a 50-50 split of people that like eggnog and not. I'm going to look right now, and it was 236 votes for yes and 248 votes for no.
Wow, that's razor thin.
It's in 49%.
I voted no, by the way. I was in the no camp. I'll
I
just
see
say
your
this.
Name there.
I like one eggnog if it's around, like as a drink. A little bit of cinnamon, a little bit of booze.
Right. A lot of people message me saying, disclaimer, I only want it with rum and cinnamon and nutmeg and ice.
I want one of those drinks at the holidays. Mm-hmm. Have one of those, but you can't be drinking those all night, obviously.
Have you seen the calories in an eggnog?
Oh, I have not.
My goodness gracious.
Wow.
It is.
You're not getting any free eggnog.
Straight to the hips, let me tell you.
Well, unless there's some low-fat, dairy-free eggnog out there or something, then Ailish is all over it.
I'm saying, eggnog is good for one drink. If you're somebody who's out there, you know, can't wait to buy the carton and just drinks it to the face, no booze, you're a lunatic.
Here's a text.
Like, you should be on a watch list.
Eric in Guelph says, what would a bunkus bite look like?
Ooh, what are you doing for a Tim Bunk?
A Tim Bunk.
What would a bunkus bite look like?
Yeah, like a Timbit. I'm assuming he's talking about the Timbits and not like if you went Lemieux and bit me.
I know, I have a joke that I don't know if it's
good. No, I don't think it's appropriate. I just tell by looking at your eyes.
The rule of thumb with saying it on air and also tweets is if you got to ask.
I know.
What would it be? Hurry.
I can't because I can't stop thinking of the joke.
Okay.
it would definitely be something chocolate because chocolate is my go-to.
Okay, well, that's why
chocolate
you
something.
You and I are similar like that with snacks. Like, I'm not a...
You know what I would try to do? I'd try to do like a... Either some kind of like a chocolate peanut butter thing because that's never really been executed in a Timbit form. Or I'd be trying to... Here's one for you. I'd try to get that stuff that's on the Ferrero Rochers.
Oh my god!
That
a little
on a
bit
chocolate.
Of hazelnut.
Yeah,
you know what I did?
That around a Timbit.
So and you then just want it for a Rocher.
You know what I saw yesterday?
But in baked form.
At your local drugstore, which will
you can't use those by the way, anybody. Those are patetic.
You know what I saw at our local drugstore that will remain nameless until they sponsor us?
Yeah.
A Ferrero Rocher. I can't say that word.
Ferrero Rocher.
Close.
Advent calendar.
So
an advent calendar of Ferrero Rocher. Give me that.
Yeah, there you go.
Real kick out of you not naming the drugstore that everyone obviously knows, but naming the brand.
Whatever. I don't care. I'm going to give something up.
I know that guy in Guelph didn't ask. Mine would be... I still very much miss the walnut crunch donut from Tim Hortons.
Yeah.
That was my favorite donut. Just
Except
give me that
for
in
you
a
had
Timbit.
To say you were going to go eat a walnut crunch, and it was like... You
never
know.
Even heard of that.
Yeah, I'm going to go crunch that walnut.
Yeah, no, it was never good.
All right, someone else who's ready for Christmas. I believe he put his Christmas tree up with his kids on the weekend. Aww. We'll talk to him after the break about your red hot Toronto Maple Leafs. That's Justin Bourne of Real Kipper and Bourne. That's next on The Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan.